Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today.
What's going on, you good humans, and welcome back to Good Humans Podcast. This is guest episode number 79 and our last episode before Christmas in 2022. So thank you so much for tuning in. It has been a unbelievable year. I can't believe how nice this year has been for Good Humans Podcast. I'm so grateful for every single one of you. If you tuned in, if today's your first episode, please make sure you leave us a little review on Apple Podcast if you enjoy it. Share it on your Instagram story, leave us 5 stars, and make sure you hit like and subscribe. If you're someone who does listen frequently, please do us a huge favor. If you aren't subscribing already, please hit that button, leave us 5 stars. And yeah, make sure you tell your friends, because I'm so grateful how much we've grown this year, but I think we can absolutely smash it next year too. A little Merry Christmas to a few people, because everyone who signed up or filled in the Good Humans Podcast survey went in the draw to win two $250 vouchers to the Good Human Factory website. And the two winners are Lily Rose and Todd Hamilton. So I know both of you are frequent listeners from your survey results. So hopefully you hear this and you'll be getting in touch. Well, I will be getting in touch with you to give you your vouchers. So congrats, guys, and Merry Christmas. All right, today's episode is going to be a very fun one. So a good friend of mine by the name of Aiden Walsh, who I guess you'd call him an entrepreneur, he's just had such a unique story, and it was really cool to hear how he's gone through life, and I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. So he grew up in Western Australia on a pearl farm, which is so unique, obviously, to be living half on a boat with his family chasing pearls out in the ocean. And then grew up in Perth after that from about the age of 12, went to school there, but then went over to Monaco and became a yacht broker and just went out on a limb and chased a random dream of traveling and setting up a life. From there, he went to America and had a weird opportunity that landed him to become a club or restaurant slash club owner in LA, which is just a crazy story, which you won't believe. And then he's gone on to found his own luggage or luxury luggage label called Aiden the Brand, which is just so cool. The quality of everything is epic. It will all be in the show notes. So yeah, this is going to be a really fun episode. Or one last thing, if you've been really enjoying these podcasts, the Good Human Factory, my mental health organization, which I'm sure everybody who listens to this knows all about, we're going to be doing some really new, exciting stuff with our merch coming into 2023. So we want to really try and get rid of a bunch of our stock. We do have quite a few things still sitting on our shelves that we want to clear. So on Boxing Day, we're going to have a 30% off sale site-wide. So make sure you put that in your calendars. Go help us clear the shelves. We're going to be coming into next year really hot. And yeah, it's going to be your last chance to pick up a few of the items that are on the shelves now. And yeah, 30% off. So go head over to the website and everything will be 30% off on Boxing Day. Enough about that. Let's jump into today's podcast. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast, Aiden Walsh.
How you going, mate?
Good, Coop. How are you, mate? You well?
I'm very well, man. It's a beautiful day here over in your place. Where are we? Coogee?
Bronte. Pretty fortunate to live in a place like Sydney, especially when the weather's good. I mean, we've had pretty bad weather over the last year or two, but we've now finally getting good weather. So working and living here every day is a blessing, mate. I'm very blessed.
Yeah, it's an absolutely incredible spot you are here. And thanks for inviting me over to catch up with this chat. But yeah, Today's going to be all about you, getting to know your story.
Awesome.
I like to start sometimes with guests to explain how we met each other, because it's a pretty interesting story.
Yeah.
It's always you meet a random Aussie overseas,
yeah,
and you just automatically get along.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'll tell maybe my part of the story. So I was thinking about it driving over here and I was like, far out. I feel like we probably only chatted for like 10 or maybe like 20 minutes.
20
that
minutes
night.
Or so. But it was just a connection, wasn't it? When you think of it, it was a short, brief conversation, but the connection we spoke about, I feel, was just you know, when you connect with someone, it just hits home, and you know when someone's a good person.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we kind of kicked it off.
Which was in LA at Rufus at like a random after party that I somehow snuck into and met you there. And I remember being so fascinated after talking to you, like, oh, why, what are you doing here as just another young Aussie? And you're like, oh, I did this and now I'm like a part owner of a club and this. And I was just like, holy shit, I got to get you on the podcast one day. And here we are about over a year later.
I know.
The first time we've seen each other since then. So yeah,
it's, it has, isn't it? Because when was that? It must have been...
it was about a year ago.
November, it was during COVID still, wasn't it?
It was LA, I think, like... the last week of October 2021.
Yeah. Crazy story how I ended up getting to LA during that point, but obviously because it was still rampant here with COVID. So myself getting there was obviously one thing, getting exemptions and everything leaving, but it just all happened, I think, for a reason as well, which is quite bizarre.
Yeah, well, we're going to catch back up to that part of the story. But the first question I do open Good Humans podcast with is, what are you grateful for right now?
What am I grateful? I think my health, my family, I think obviously my surroundings, very grateful for that. I think, you know, we sometimes overlook the fact that we are healthy. We get to wake up each day, we get food on our table and we've got a family. And one of the biggest things in life I've found is that doing things like that in the morning and saying what you're grateful for really sets your day and helps with your own mentality. In life, and I think bringing that positivity to everything you do has been a huge uplift in my life, I think. And I know obviously you do it each day, and as much as I don't post it, I think, you know, it's something I just say to myself every day, what am I grateful for? And like I said, just waking up every day, knowing that you're healthy, knowing that you've got food on the table, knowing that you've got a beautiful family and that people will care about you. And I mean, you know, in the surrounding, it's pretty magical.
It's amazing. You just need to recognize it sometimes to understand. Yeah, there is so much to be grateful for. I'm just going to shut this door.
Yeah, mate, no worries. Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet. So let's, before we really get into your story, just to introduce yourself.
Sure.
Who are you and what do you do?
Sure. So my name's Aidan Walsh. I originally hail from Broome, Western Australia. I like to say I am somewhat of an entrepreneur. I have been in multiple businesses throughout my lifetime, and I think the main thing now what a lot of people know me for is Aidan the Brand, which is my own suitcase, luggage and accessories brand.
Amazing. So we're going to catch up how that all came about, now we're going to go back and start from the start. So where'd you grow up? What was life like as a kid? Siblings, family life, and school?
Yeah, awesome. So mate, I grew up in Broome, Western Australia, a small coastal town off the north coast of WA. And that in itself was, you know, it was a small coastal pearling town. And my father and my mother, they were pearl divers back in the 80s and then decided to create their own pearl farm. And then, you know, in the 90s, obviously I popped out. I came along and, mate, we lived up in Broome with myself, my two sisters and my mum and dad. And that was a... is that right? It was a pretty amazing experience, I must say. Living in Broome and being in that era of the 90s and early 2000s when it was still such a small coastal town, not the tourist booming town it is today, but living there was more so for me. It was almost like I was a country kid. I lived my life in this, you know, small part of Broome where it was a lot of bushland and you know, a lot of the indigenous were there who, you know, I became really good friends with. I was in a small class, Broome Primary School, and a lot of my friends over there and a lot of my classmates were Indigenous. So I got to understand the Indigenous culture tremendously well and have so much respect and admiration for the Indigenous people. But for myself living in Broome and having the pearl attributes of my family, a lot of the time we spent out at sea as well. So you could say I lived half on a boat and half on land. And it was a pretty unique experience, I think. And I guess, you know, what am I grateful for of what we started with? I think that upbringing, because I really think that molds you into the person who you are today and continue to want to be and just push boundaries. But yeah, mate, so I grew up in Broome until I was 12. And then my family decided to send me down to Perth in the city for school. For secondary schooling, which is high school there.
Wow. So that's so interesting growing up as a family of pearl farmers, like such a unique adventure-based lifestyle. And obviously now with the travel that you do and setting up work all around the world, must have come from that kind of early days understanding of breaking free of that normal lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matrix, as we call it. Like,
absolutely, mate. I think, you know, the biggest thing for me was I knew Broome was always going to be there. And I've been a real advocate for getting outside your comfort zone and outside the box, so to speak, but still maintaining your grassroots and the humbleness that you've come from a place such as Broome, which is so special and truly unique to me, especially with all the culture and the traditions that I got to grow up with. It was an incredible place. I'm very humble and grateful for my family to obviously settle there and live there. And we still got ties to Broome, so we still have a family home there. Nice. So my mom and my sisters go up there all the time. I don't go there as much anymore, just with everything else going on. But when I do, it still feels like home. So I think, you know, when you do find that place which you like to call home, I do like to say it's still Broome in my heart, but I guess I haven't been there for a long time. But growing up there was amazing.
That's so cool. It sounds, such a unique upbringing. And like you said, it's so cool to as well have that connection to culture and understand the Indigenous culture. I think it's something that a lot of city kids miss, and it's something that I wish I understood a bit more. And I bet I was lucky enough when I lived in Byron in 2020 to live with a friend of mine, Jack Wilson, who's Indigenous, and got to learn a bit more about it. And I think it's so important that we all
absolutely
get to immerse yourself in it, not just from the fact of it being taught to you at school because it's kind of they have to tick the box, but actually being friends with Indigenous people and understanding the culture, I think would have been such a a great way to grow up.
For sure. I think, you know, when you do get to understand and educate yourself on the culture, and you get to immerse yourself in that environment, it really was a special time for me because, similar to you, I guess you do have friends who are Indigenous and still lifelong friends. Mm. And when I go back there, it's amazing to see, you know, where they're at in life and what they're doing, and just, you know, they're so happy.
Yeah.
You know, I think the country life in which they've created in Broome, and a lot of my friends created in Broome, they're so content, and it just goes to show that you don't have to go out and do all these things to be happy and content. Mm. And I just really appreciated my time there. And obviously growing up, we had, this beautiful place in Broome, and we had motorbikes and we had tennis courts. So after school, we'd always used to come back to our place and always, muck around and get on the bikes. And we had a lot of bushland around us. So that upbringing was very much like living on a farm, but you know, you're in a small town, and then you'd go out on a boat. So it was a really cool cross, you know, surf and turf type scenario.
Yeah.
But yeah, mate, I'm so grateful for that. And obviously a lot of my Indigenous friends who I'm still really close with today.
That's so cool. So then you turn 12 and you go 12, to high school, and you get sent down to go to boarding school?
I didn't go to boarding school. So I was fortunate enough to not go to boarding school. I didn't want to go to boarding school. And I didn't really want to leave Broome. I was probably the one out of my family the most who didn't want to leave Broome. My older sister, she went to boarding school. So she went to St. Hilda's in Perth, and mate, she did 1 year there. And then she decided that was enough, and my mum decided that was enough as well. And we actually all moved down to Perth from Broome.
Nice.
Which was, you know, it was really tough at the time because I went to Cottesloe Primary for year seven. So going through, you know, I guess primary school and having all your friends in Broome and living this beautiful life in Broome to going to a city where you had to wear ties and short shorts and high socks, juxtaposed to not wearing shoes at all in Broome when you go to school, it was quite a different scenario. So at first I didn't like it at all. I really disliked the city life. But as you say, you adapt to change and you adapt to new environments. And man, I had the best year of my life. And year seven for me in Cottesloe Primary was amazing. I met so many wonderful friends who I'm still friends with today, but it was just the transition at first was obviously hard, but you get used to it. And so I went to Cottesloe Primary.
So they have primary school in year seven still.
Primary school, yeah, year seven. Yeah.
So in New South Wales, year seven's the first year of high school.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So year seven's in WA. So yeah, it might have changed recently, I'm not sure. But year seven was the last year of primary school. and then went to high school. So I went to Scotch College, which is a private boys school.
Yeah.
And again, I think, you know, coming from Broome in a public school and then going to a private boarding school, but it has borders obviously, yeah. But a private boys school was such a huge change for me as well, because now you're going to, you know, a private boys school, which is a really reputable school in Perth, and being outside your comfort zone again. But mate, it was tremendous. One thing I do, you know, thank my parents for every day. It's you know, getting me out of Broome.
Education, yeah.
Good education and just lifelong mates. You know, my closest friends are still my mates who I went to school with. And we've got such a tight bond, and that will never change. I think, you know, with myself being overseas for so long and coming back, you know you've got a true friendship when you can catch up with someone and you haven't seen them for a couple of years and nothing's changed.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. And I think that's what really created such a great dynamic by going to a private boys school, because you really form a camaraderie and a bond with your mates. And yeah, mate, it was a truly special time in my life. And I do thank my parents every day for that.
Yeah, it's so cool that you can reflect on that and be so grateful for it.
Yeah.
When you're at school, what was your, say, vision for your future? Did you have an idea of what you were thinking of doing after school? Were you into sport? Or yeah, was it like sport or academic was your focus? And yeah, when you were getting towards the end of high school, what was the kind of dreams and goals career-wise?
I think the biggest thing for me during my high school years was sport. Sport played a huge part in my upbringing, and I think a lot of that came from Broome as well. You know, being such an active kid when I was younger and playing a lot of football. So at Scotch, I played a lot of football and swam a lot. Sport to me was just, it was a great way again to socialize and be with your mates and have a really strong form of camaraderie again. But when I was, you know, doing sport, obviously the academic side of it, you're going to this really privileged school and, you know, you don't want to waste your parents' money. So you obviously have to, you know, take the education seriously. And I probably was one who did and I didn't. I played around a bit at school, obviously, as we all do. But I think, you know, as you go through your high school years and you finally get to that, you know, year 11 and year 12 mark, and things start to become really real when you're studying for TEE, and which is, you know, your final examination to get into university. It really then turned a path, and I started to obviously take the education seriously. But during that time, I didn't think I wanted to go to university. And I thought to myself, you know, I would like to either go down the sporting route or I'd like to go down the nautical route, which was obviously going back to the Pearl Farm and managing the Pearl Farm of my family and getting my licensing tickets to basically skipper boats. So you could do that. And in 2008, just before the GFC, my dad actually sold the Pearl Farm. Oh. So that took a spin on obviously what I wanted to do, and he ended up moving down to Perth to be closer to us all. So that was a beautiful thing. But I guess leading up to year 11 and 12, I still didn't really know what I wanted to do. I think sport played a huge part in what I wanted to do, but obviously the educational path, university, didn't really seem like a thing I wanted to do at the time.
Interesting. So then when you finished school, what was that next chapter?
So I finished school. I actually, I worked as a landscaper for 6 months just to save enough money to go backpacking. So I took a gap year. And I went backpacking for 6 months overseas.
You worked for 6 months as a laborer.
Yeah.
6 months
traveling. 6 months of travel. And, mate, I did it, you know, like a proper backpacker would. It was, you know, hostels and, you know, backpacks on your back and all of those little things. And it was a such a cool time in my life, because you really get to understand, you know, culture and independency and all these things at such a young age. And I went there with a couple of mates who, you know, we're still really good friends with to this day. But I did that for 6 months, and then I finally came back to Australia, where I went back to Perth. And, you know, I think that's when I almost had to be real to myself and say, listen, what do I want to do? Do I want to go down the nautical path, or do I want to go to university? And, you know, fortunately enough, I passed my exams and got a high enough TEE score to go and study commerce at university. And my mum was probably the big advocate in pushing me to obviously go get a secondary education and a degree, where my dad wanted me to go down the nautical route. So I ended up going to TAFE in Fremantle and completing some of my licensing courses to skipper boats. And then I also went to university at Curtin and studied commerce as well. So I was juggling two things at once. Yeah, which was quite a cool experience as well. I ended up getting my licensing tickets first because it was obviously
shorter
duration, and that was great. And I really enjoyed that. And whilst studying, so that took me into 2 years out of school. Year three, I ended up going back to my dad's pearl farm or ex-pearl farm and actually skippering a boat. So I lived in Broome when I was, I would have been 19. Wow. 19, I lived in Broome again, which was a really unique experience again. Coming back to Broome from, living there when I was 11 to coming back to when I was 19, obviously so much had changed. But again, it's something where you just adapt. But yeah, I did that. So I went on my dad's ex-pearl farm, which was a really gritty, grotty, dirty experience. You're up at 4 a.m. You're basically skippering out in these rough oceans, cleaning long lines, getting algae and barnacles and chipping away at pearl shells. Very gritty, dirty job. But I enjoyed it at the time. I did it for 6 months and then it came to summer in Europe again. And I decided to go over to Europe and use the money I had saved up during pearl farming to go over to Europe and spent, the 6 months over there. While still studying externally with my
commerce degree,
and mate, it got to the end of that year, and I was 20, and I had this spur of the moment thing where I was like, you know what, I don't think college university, from American terminology, I don't think university is for me, and I don't think the nautical life's for me. So I had this real fork in the road of what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. And I had 2 years under my belt with Curtin. I just finished my coxswains and my Master 5, which allows you to drive a boat up to a certain amount of meters commercially. And I just didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was in this limbo stage, which took me to, me ending up living overseas or moving overseas and trying to find a new life over there.
So where'd you move when you first decided, I don't want to move overseas?
So, mate, I actually moved to Monaco out of all places, which was quite bizarre. I actually ended up pestering a guy called Steve Kidd, and he was a really successful yacht broker, similar upbringing to myself. He lived in a place called Meekatharra, which was a real remote part of WA. So he and I obviously had that connection instantly. But, mate, when I was 20, I kept pestering him for a job, basically, to become a yacht broker. And I thought, rather than being on water, why don't I, sell boats. And, yachts to me was always a passion because of my family and, getting my tickets. And I pestered him for 6 months and he just wouldn't accept my application to go work with him. And, mate, it got to June when I finally told my mum that I wasn't going to continue with university, and I was literally at the final stages of completing my degree.
Oh no!
And she was obviously very upset with it all, as you would. But it just got to a stage where I just I had that light bulb moment, and I thought to myself,
this isn't it. Yeah.
This isn't it. And if I think life's short. So if I don't give it a crack, I can always come back and finish my degree. So I basically deferred, told her I would finish it eventually. Yeah. deferred, and I ended up speaking with Steve, and he said, listen, if you're serious, meet me here on a certain date in the south of France at this beach club called Nikki Beach. And if you're serious, you're going to be there. So I said to my mom, I'm going to Monaco. She goes, you're crazy. I go, I know, but... Why not? I got to try it. Right. And I got a group of the boys together, and we all went to south of France to Saint-Tropez, and it was the biggest eye opener I've ever experienced in my life. It's where the rich and the famous play, has so much history and culture. You're seeing some of the biggest yachts in the world. You're seeing helicopters land on yachts, private jets everywhere. It was just the craziest eye opener I've ever experienced myself personally, but.
as in an eye-opener to understand that there's like a different kind of wealth.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, obviously Australia with all the commodity and agricultural sectors, we got so much money here in Australia. But I think seeing it all in one place, you know, obviously Australia is so big and we got many, you know, rich cities, but seeing it all in one place in Saint-Tropez, this small little coastal town, was just phenomenal. So, mate, I ended up going to Nikki Beach with the boys and we're all sitting there. There was 10 of us and, he walks in and he sends me a message saying, I'm here, where are you? And I said, we're the group over at the back. There's 10 of us. And he walks over and he's with his girlfriend at the time. And he comes over to me, comes over to the table and he goes, okay, which one's Aiden? And I stand up and his girlfriend at the time goes, he's hired, and hired me on the spot, which was quite amazing. And then, mate, I essentially lived with them, traveled everywhere with them for three years.
Wow,
selling boats. So I was living in Monaco and Saint-Tropez. So they had a place in Monaco and then they actually had a boat in Saint-Tropez. So again, I lived on a boat for quite some time.
Wow.
And lived in Monaco out of all places, and I was only 21. So
no idea on how to boat broken.
No idea. Had an understanding, I guess, of the financial element to it. But I think a lot of brokerage, similar to like real estate, it's all relationships and rapport.
Yeah.
And you know, myself, I'm a very outgoing person. So this to me was such a great thing to do. And I had such a love and passion for boats.
Mm.
So mate, I lived with them half of the year in south of France and then lived with them in Florida, in Miami for the other half of the year.
Wow.
And we did 3 months of bouncing back and forward. And obviously so grateful to both Steve and Rhonda for what they've done for me during that time and still, you know, to this day, what they continue to do for me. It really, for a young person at such a young age, being at a place like Monaco where a lot of your friends were 35 plus years old because, you know, you're the youngest kid there, was the coolest experience I could have ever had just from an independency point of view.
Yeah.
And then obviously so thankful to my parents for obviously supporting me through that time as well. Because, you know, you're a young kid, you're living in a place such as Monaco. Obviously, the financial obligations to live in a place like that is quite extreme. So,
How were you making money when you first got there? You were just kind of like...
No, so I had a bit of savings.
Living off savings. Were you paying you like working with him?
So it was basically an intern. But I just basically lived off savings and then obviously had the help from my parents as well during those tough times.
Was there like a carrot dangling that you can start making money with him? Or
absolutely. Yeah, we ended up doing like quite well. Yeah. We did a lot of deals together, which was great. We focused a lot on the charters and we didn't actually sell a boat, but we did a lot of charters and charters for us were great. Yeah. He had a lot of clients already and it was just a really cool experience because, you know, my day-to-day jobs with him was basically he'd drop me at a dock and I'd just go up and hit up every single boat or owner on the boat if they wanted to sell their yacht or they wanted a charter or whomever it may be. Or you'd go to a beach club and you'd just network around a beach club or you'd go to a restaurant at night. It was a really unique experience that, like, I've never experienced. But from a young age, you really got to understand the urge of independency and how important rapport is. Rapport to me is, I think that's the number one thing I've learned from networking.
Relationship building is so important.
Yeah,
it's so cool. And now, I didn't know any of this part of the story because I'm like, how the hell did you end up in LA?
Yeah.
You being a part owner of a club.
So yeah. Let's so get into that.
Yeah, I mean, is that the next chapter?
That's the next chapter. Yeah.
You're finishing up on the boats. What finishing made you want to leave doing that? Because I'm guessing there is like a great financial
absolutely
kickback if you start getting successful in that absolutely part of the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the way in which, you know, my old boss Steve looked at it, he focused on the whales. We like to call them, you know, the whales, the big boats, the big, you know, expensive stuff. And so, you know, when you do get a charter from one of them, it's quite a lucrative industry. Yeah. But, you know, gosh, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's few and far between, right? So, mate, I was 24 and I had just flown into LA. I wanted to go for a holiday. I had a bit of money saved up from yacht brokering and I flew into LA and I just remember, even being as a kid watching like the OC and these sort of things and Lords of Dogtown and that sort of era flying in over LA and you see the Hollywood sign, you see the hills, and it was just such a, I like to say it was such a urge to me to almost move there. It was something where, you know, when you just get that feeling when something feels so right, I literally had that moment and I landed on the tarmac and I was like, I don't know what it is. I haven't even stepped foot yet on California soil, but this feels so right to me.
Wow.
And, mate, I ended up staying there for 6 months and basically kicked it there and met people through, you know, there's a lot of Australians over there. So I was fortunate enough to meet different groups from Australia.
On a holiday visa? Just
kind on of a holiday visa, yeah, yeah. So I did...
went out and in after 3 months?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I did 3 months there on an ESTA and then I left and came back to Australia and then I went back to America and did another 3 months and just was holidaying there.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where, you know, we started going out a lot. You know, I was now, you know, 24. So, you know, over there, I was 21, but I started, you know, I think that's the age where you start going to these big nightclubs and that sort of realm. And it was, man, I started going into this place a lot called Warwick. And it was a really bizarre scenario, but how they became my business partners. But, man, we're going to this club called Warwick. There was a discrepancy one night with a bill. And the next morning, I ended up calling up Warwick and saying, hey guys, sorry, there's a discrepancy with the bill. Is there anything, you know, we can do about it? And the owner, Sylvan Bitten, you know, great, great friend of mine and business partner, like I'd call him business partner as well, called me back and said, listen, why don't you come in here and see us? And we'd love to have you here for a night. It's all complimentary and, you know, sorry about the discrepancy. And I was like, oh, sure, that's
what
nice.
What happened? They stuffed up with the bill or something?
Yeah, they stuffed up with the bill and, I, you know, not their fault, but just happens yeah, when it's happens. A busy nightlife. Yeah. And mate, so I ended up going there a couple of nights later and I went to Warwick and it was before the club opened and I sat there with JT, who's my business partner, and a guy called Dave Jarrett, who also is my business partner. And we just talked shop. And we just, similar thing to, I guess, you and I, we just connected so well. And mate, ended up having a blast of a night with them. And then the next day, we ended up catching up again. And then we just formed such an amazing relationship over the many years of being there. And then just seeing what they were doing and where I was at, I didn't know my next move, obviously, because I wasn't yacht broker anymore. And I wanted to basically invest into something. And not work for someone in a way. I think that's when that entrepreneurial element started kicking in. I always knew I didn't want to work for someone per se, but I wanted to have this life of freedom and do my own things and create different things and work on many projects. And mate, I had the opportunity to invest into a club with them and a restaurant. And this was back in 2016. So I just decided to do it. And mate, it took a couple of years to develop, but yeah, we ended up going into business with one another and into the clubbing space in LA. So again, going from, I guess, yacht brokerage to working on boats to university to now like, you know, owning a club and a restaurant and doing all those sort of things was crazy. So I did that and
like 26.
26, yeah.
Good on you, man.
That's
just such a great story of just like
going for it,
taking phone calls and, you know what I mean? So many people wouldn't even call up about a discrepancy.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And I, mate, still to this day, we still talk about it. It was just such a bizarre way on how you meet. And, you know, normally there's this discrepancy, someone's pretty unhappy. But I'm not an angry person. I just, yeah, I think you just at the end of the day, you just want to come to a general resolution or conclusion. And you know, work with someone on it. And I think that's where the yacht brokerage stuff really came to play because you get to understand how people barter and negotiate and all those things. But this wasn't anything like that. It was just a simple conversation. Really respectful guy invited me there, and then next thing you know, we ended up becoming business partners.
And yeah, so talk us through the bar and how people can check it out.
Yeah, so mate, we it's called The Hideaway. So we got a new place on Rodeo Drive called The Hideaway. It opened in August this year.
Wow.
It took five years to build just because of the extremity of the project. It was a really, you know, large project. It's a bar, it's a restaurant, it's a step above a restaurant, step below a club. And it's just a really cool, swanky place on Rodeo Drive, which is the first hospitality venue on Rodeo Drive, obviously being so prestigious and being one of the most well-known streets in the world. It's been a really cool thing to be involved with. So it's a Mexican fusion and steakhouse as well. So it's been a really cool place for people to go and network and mingle. And the build out itself is phenomenal. But yeah, people can go check it out. It's on Rodeo Drive, called The Hideaway. So
I'll leave the address and stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I was just saying, I was literally been talking about this week. This is the first year since I was like 11 that I haven't gone overseas.
Really? No way.
Crazy. But when I get back overseas, LA is definitely on my list for next year.
Sure.
So definitely come check it out.
For sure, man. Yeah, it's been a really cool moment for us, I guess, just waiting so long for it to open. And we had a lot of obviously rules and regulations and permits to pass during the time of the build. So you look at, you know, the expectancy from being a 2-year project, which stretched out to 5.
Yeah,
COVID slowed it down for, you know, 18 months. So that itself hurt because obviously during that time our rent period started. So we started paying rent and we had construction workers. And so we obviously had to dip more capital into that. So again, another stressful thing to worry about. But man, we did it. You know, it's open and it's doing well. And we've got some amazing business partners. We've got some really well-known people from America who are involved. And then we've got some well-known people in the hospitality scene. And again, it's just a really cool group of investors and managerial team who came together to create something magical.
Yeah, that's so cool. I'm so excited to go check it out.
Yeah, it's cool.
Sounds epic.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's rewind just a little bit because during all this, Aiden the Brand starts too.
Let's
talk about that because obviously it would have taken quite a bit of capital to get this the bar up and running.
Absolutely.
So were you like just, did you have a fair bit of savings from the brokerage and you just invested that?
Yeah.
But then at the same time, you need to invest capital to start your own brand
as well. So yeah.
Well, let's rewind, I guess, back to where that comes into play.
Yeah. So before I got involved into the hospitality side, there was a year and a half there where I had an opportunity to invest into a medical organization, which focused on allergy testing and immunotherapy.
And that was when you were in LA?
That was when I was in LA.
I first started meeting the Warwick guys.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously you're building rapport and everything, but you obviously you need work and you want to work and you want to find something to do. And I ended up investing into this allergy testing and immunotherapy organization. And that just operated out of California. And that was a really cool thing. It was basically anyone who had allergies, they were able to be tested by a doctor. So we basically created a program where you would bring the services to the doctor, similar to here in Australia where you have to, if you want your allergy tested, you have to go to a specialist.
Yeah.
But the doctor then misses out on the revenue. So we created a platform over there where you could get tested by your physician. They bill for the service. They obviously get remunerated for that service and the patient doesn't have to wait six weeks to go see a specialist.
Uh-huh.
So we created a platform that
when
did allergy testing.
How did you meet people in the medical
industry? So when I was when I was in Miami, I met a group of people there who started a medical company previously, and then once I invested into this new thing called allergy testing and immunotherapy, separate from their previous endeavors. That's when, you know, it was my first investment in entrepreneurial, endeavor. You know, it's when you first put up your own capital.
Mm.
It's when you first take that risk and going into something I had absolutely no idea about because I didn't study anything to do with allergies, testing, or immunotherapy or anything medical related.
If someone came to you with an investment pack and were like, hey, we're doing this and it looked good and you're like, fuck, medical in America.
And it was in LA and I wanted to stay in LA and, it was attractive.
And stuff when you're
so I ended up getting sponsored. So basically the company we formed ended up sponsoring me. So I ended up getting sponsored by the company and that was a two-year visa. So if you're an Australian with work experience or a degree, you can get a thing called an E3 visa where the company sponsors you for an extended period of time. So Matt, I had that visa for 4 years.
Wow.
So I just backed it up so I renewed it once, and then I renewed it again. So I did that for two years and that was a great financial
I guess, move for me.
So you're working on the business as well, not just investing?
Yeah, so I did a lot of the business development. Okay. So I obviously had to understand and learn about allergy testing and immunotherapy and treating patients and just doing a lot more of the business development side. So partnerships and clinic operations and working around that on a managerial side. Mm. And then learning it myself as well. So you'd obviously have trained physicians and trained nurses who we would employ, and then they'd go in and do all the procedures. So it was more so working on the business development side of it and understanding how we can bring this to another state or how we can bring this to a government body or whomever it may be. And mate, I did that for 2 years. And then mate, I ended up getting rid of that completely.
The business is the business still going?
No, the business isn't going anymore. So mate, in 2017, I decided to basically get out of the medical space. It wasn't something I really enjoyed. It was a great learning experience, that's for sure, but it wasn't something I really enjoyed. And so I ended up just deciding to go my separate ways. And for me, it was obviously a tough decision, but it was a decision that I still stand by.
Did you sell out of it or did you get?
Yes, I sold out of it. I got out of that just because.
And that was kind of the capital that you could use.
Exactly. And you know, even with that though, like you know, on a financial side, it was I still lost. I'd say I lost more than I received, okay. For sure. But it was probably it wasn't actually a successful endeavor in the end. Uh-huh. It actually didn't. Year one was really successful, and then year two just didn't go well. And I actually ended up just losing everything I put into it.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, it's almost like you are starting from scratch. Luckily, I didn't put all my life savings into it, but you know, I lost a fair amount of the money I put into it. I guess all of it, but. Yeah, I guess it happens. It's life. And I guess the failures for me has always been the biggest driving point because you have to fail to succeed.
Yeah, absolutely. So you leave there.
Leave there and then went
it's
into
already
the
in the works.
Yeah, it's in the works. Yeah.
So and you're like, all right, I'm going to put my energy into that. Yeah. So how does Aiden the Brand come into?
Yeah, so Aiden the Brand comes into it. So Aiden the Brand.
Because if it's a five-year process, you need to start making money somewhere else.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. So I actually ended up during that time was still chartering boats. So I still had my brokerage license. Uh-huh. So I had clients whom I'd still charter boats to a couple of times a year. And, you know, they were big clients. And, you know, one of our good friends, Dan Bilzerian, he's probably one of my, biggest clients at the time. And, man, I would just, do that sort of stuff during the year.
They keep you going.
Keep me going. And I would also then, you know, work on the hospitality side. So invested into the hospitality. And then we started obviously thinking of the designs and working with the team on that side of things while still doing a lot of the yacht brokerage. And then, mate, I actually had an opportunity to move to New York. And I was actually going through a breakup at the time. And I was living in LA. I had a buddy in New York who was doing really well in hospitality, and I was going through a breakup, which led me to, I was going to move to London before I moved to New York. Went through a breakup, didn't end up moving to London. And my buddy from New York called me and said, listen, do you want to come to New York and do a new project with me? And I had never lived in New York, had been there, but never lived there. And I decided to go to New York and give it a crack. And we created a really cool membership club, which was New York's highest rooftop pool and membership club. And we had events there. We had members come through, and it was almost like a beach club in New York. And we just ran it for the summer. So very, obviously very grateful and thankful to, his name's Barry Dry. And you know, he and I, one of my school friends. So no crazy way. Yeah, and he was my sister's year, so he was 3 years older than I am. But you know, I guess when you're in Perth,
he just saw that you had that networking experience.
Yeah,
in business,
yeah, like, exactly.
And said, "Come help me out."
And mate, we ended up creating this together, and it was called The Century, and it still operates today. And mate, we had an amazing summer together, and I lived in New York for the summer, and we had really cool acts come through and perform. We created a really cool membership club, and that again was my next entrepreneurial endeavor. but it was something where you're living in a city like New York, which to me, I thought I'd never live in a city like New York. You know, I always wanted to be by the coast, you know, Miami and LA, all those places by the coast. And even though New York is on the coast, it's not like what we get here, right? So I did that for a year with him in 2018 to 2019. And during that time is when I was in New York. I was at Soho House one day, and I was just looking at all these creatives and what they were doing and what they were wearing, and they had their own steez about them. And for me, I then thought to myself, there must be something I can do, which is my target demographic that can target people who are creatives and entrepreneurs and tastemakers and creators and content creators, et cetera. Mm. And I was still working on the hospitality stuff with Barry, and that was all going really well.
And you guys are still trying to get stuff going with the LA
bar. LA bar. And so that was, that was in the background. So working on that, and then obviously working on the stuff with Barry in New York. And mate, it got to the end of 2018 when I literally was on a plane. I was heading back to Australia for the Christmas period. And I was literally at the airport, and I remember just looking around, and I just kept seeing the same luggage. It was like your Samsonites and your Moas and your Toomies being carted around. And I then got on the plane and kept seeing it again. And, you know, it's obviously a long flight back from America, and you just sit there and you see the same thing come past. And it's almost like when you want a car and you see the car always, you know, it's like that sort of scenario. And I kept seeing the same luggage come past. And similar thing to that Soho House moment where there was a lot of creators and people in fashion, and that they're seeing what they would wear and how they would go about their lives, et cetera. And then seeing this luggage, I thought to myself, you know what? Why don't I have a research on luggage? See what the luggage market's like.
Yeah. Just go ahead. You're just like, yep, let's do it. It's so inspiring. It's something that I think so many people get so paralyzed by fear, but seem to have like just keep going.
It's been a journey.
What's the process? Get off the plane, you're like,
get off the plane, and like that whole
hard to start a brand.
Yeah, know, dude. No, it's crazy.
Far better than me. But
it's crazy. It's crazy. I mean, I got on the plane during that, you know, 14-hour flight.
Was that just a holiday back, and you were planning to go back to New York?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're going to try and replicate that and get into more like the restaurant space in New York. And mate, I just kept working on it over the summer when I was back in Perth. So I was back in Perth for 2 months. My visa had expired, so I was coming back to renew my visa. And I spent 2 months over the summer in Perth just researching luggage. Just researching the industry, getting to know it more. And I think it was interesting because I know when the medical stuff failed for me, I was like, I'm never investing or getting involved with something I don't know again. Mm-hmm. That was one of my learning things, right? Here we are, luggage, which I had no idea about. But I think it comes back to like your passion. And to me, traveling was such a huge part of my life. So was being open to different lifestyles and cultures and religions. And I still think the best educational thing I've ever learned is traveling. I think when you travel,
University of life,
1,000%. And I was back in Perth for the summer, and man, I was just researching, and then I ended up going, okay, am I going to do this? Let's do it. So I ended up flying to Asia, and man, I spent 6 months in Asia, in between like China. I went to Japan. I went to Hong Kong, Vietnam. And literally going through factories. So through my research, I found where all the factory districts were and basically how to start a luggage
brand.
By myself. I had a buddy come over who's in fashion and understands it a lot to help me on the original textiles. And because he's got a really successful leather bags company in London. So he came over for a week, and we just kicked it in Hong Kong and went to all these cool factories, and he was there through, you know, a bit of that process, which was quite cool. I got to that point where, you know, I was there for 6 months, and I ended up having translators. So I hired translators to come with me, because when you're in deep parts of China and Vietnam, it's really hard to find obviously English speaking people and negotiate. So I ended up going through 34 different factories out of that 6 months, and every single factory that I thought would be good, I ended up doing sampling. So over the 6 months, I sampled, you know, 34 different suitcases.
And obviously that in itself was, you know, you're just watching your bank account going.
And you're still just kind of living off these few brokerage deals.
So I kept doing that, which is great. And that
such
was
a great like backbone.
It is such a great backbone. Mate, it's, yeah, and still luckily to this day, I still do it. You know,
that with Dan on a boat one day.
We'll bring you out one day, mate. I think you're the wrong gender for that. But
hey, we'll bring my wakeboard ambassadors because they can teach him how to wakeboard.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, we'll do it one day, man. But had that. So during that time, that was basically funding, and then I ended up having the overall concept done. So I had my final sample done. And it was coming up to the time now where I go, okay, let's go and patent this thing. Let's go put trademarks on it. Let's protect what I've just built over the last 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
And obviously that in itself is an expensive, vigorous process.
Especially globally.
Trademarking
globally.
It's huge.
I've done just Australia and that was expensive. And
it's a long process, right? So during that time, you know, normal patent will take 12 to 18 months.
And you were doing patents for different things.
Yeah. So it's like all functionalities and then design patterns and then logo trademarks, our signature print and monogram. That's all design patented as well. So for me, if I was going to do this, I wanted to do it right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and not get caught down the road after investing all this time and energy. So, mate, that took me to basically the end of 2019, start of 2020. And I was back in New York, and one of my good friends, Michael Heller, who I met in New York, he actually was one of our customers who would come to our bar in New York a lot. Really cool guy, bond brokerage guy, and he did a lot of bond trading. Anyway, we formed a really cool relationship, and I basically took the idea to him. I said, listen, I've got this crazy idea. I spent the last year in Asia going through all of these patterns and trademarks and designs and finding the right manufacturer and materials. And man, I was in the deep jungle of China for a good 6 months of my life. And he looked at me and said, listen, like, show us the designs and I'll have a look at it. And man, at this point I was like, you know, I need an investor. Cause if I, you know, I couldn't go and do this on my own.
On a
bulk good, you know what I mean? And that's, you know, that's it's exactly. So I ended up speaking to him and he lent us some money to go ahead and put a bulk sample together of our carry-on case, which is our signature carry-on case. And mate, that took 4 months. So then it came to March 2020 and this is when COVID started becoming rampant.
So what happened with the, sorry, I just want to like,
yeah,
I just like trying to wrap my head around the story. Like, yeah. They're going to have to do a movie on you one day. So, so your New York subscription base place, once you like go to China, you just put that on hold and tell your mate, you just take it. I'm focusing on this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I ended up just basically getting out of that. And going to Asia. I think, you know, that for me, it was, I always wanted to do my own thing.
You didn't want to be somebody else's thing that you held with.
I wanted to be my own thing. And I think luggage was just a weird calling. It was just weird how it all happened. Cause I never would have thought I'd be in luggage.
Yeah. So you get this big drop, this guy invests, lend some money. So
lend some money too.
First drop. Yeah. What are you doing? You're like 3PL and stuff. How did you?
Yeah. So mate, all the 3PL.
So if anyone listening, 3PL is third party logistics, like basically shipping and stuff.
Yeah,
where did you warehouse? Were you wholesaling?
Yeah. So we had all our warehousing in Japan.
Yeah.
And then we had it in China as well. So we had it in Shanghai and then we had it in Osaka.
And were you going like wholesaling?
No. So at first it was all direct to consumer.
Amazing.
So it was I remember the first container arriving into Perth because I was back in Perth for the Christmas period for end of 2019, start of 2020. And the container had just arrived before New Year's. And obviously in December 2019, I think we first heard about COVID. And I just got this brand new container, 500 suitcases of all this luggage. And I was so happy and I was unpacking it with my family and we put it into my uncle's warehouse, which he owned in Perth. And it was this gigantic warehouse and I took up a small section of it and the rest was all empty. But it was that little thing in itself as well to me was like, you know what? I want to fill this whole thing up.
that was like, that was a stepping stone for me where I really got amped, so to speak, of building this stuff and being in a warehouse environment, going, I can't wait to see this full one day, and then next, you know, month it's gone. You know what I mean? Like having a look at that. And so we had the warehouse there, and then I then worked on the branding of it all for the next 2 months, like really beginning to take it to market. And then March hit.
Luggage brand, luxury travel brand.
Literally COVID. Wow. And mate, I was in London for 3 weeks. I was there for a wedding, and then I was coming back to Australia for another wedding. And next thing you know, the border announcement came out that, you know, any Australian who's overseas,
come home.
And I was like, you know what, I'm enjoying some time in London whilst I work on the brand. I'm just going to spend some time here. If it wasn't for that wedding, I reckon I probably would have been stuck in London, and who knows where I'd be now and have all this luggage in Australia. But I ended up coming back for this wedding, and mate, I came back with a carry-on suitcase because I was coming back for 3 days for a wedding and going back to London, and a tuxedo. And I remember getting off the plane, and there was a huge amount of people in hazard suits and people coming onto the plane. And then next thing you know, you're getting escorted off, you're getting COVID tested, but you didn't have to go into hotel quarantine. So I ended up going back to my family home with my mom, and poor her, she couldn't leave the house for 2 weeks because obviously I came back, it was mandatory. And I ended up staying there for 2 weeks. Didn't have COVID, which was great, but the border had shut. So I had all my belongings in London. I had a carry-on suitcase and a tuxedo, and I had nothing with me in Perth, nothing. Next thing you know, it's an 24 months, the border was shut. So I couldn't leave Australia.
So and I had all these,
I was stuck in Perth. I was stuck in Perth until April 2021. So I stayed in Perth for that whole time. During that period of winter, I spent 6 months up in Broome though. And again, I had all of this luggage sitting in a warehouse, which I couldn't touch really because it's like no one wants luggage because you couldn't travel. And I ended up going out to Broome. I just said, you know what, I'm getting out of this winter. I'm going out to Broome. And I just went to the family home. And mate, I fished every day. I crabbed every day. I went to the beach every day, but then still working on the brand behind scenes. So trying to figure out who our market is and doing market analysis and really figuring out.
Do you have a business partner or anyone kind of helping with?
No, so I didn't have anyone. Michael, who was
lent you the money.
Yeah, so Michael, who lent the money, he was always a silent investor. Yeah. So he's very optimistic like I am. And we all thought that it was going to be 6 months and not 24. But so I was up in Broome just working on the brand. And that was a really, I think that was the most pivotal time for me because it really allowed me to, I think if I went to market before COVID, or let's just say COVID didn't happen and I went to market then and there in early 2020, I don't think I'd be where I am today because I think I would have rushed going to market and not understanding the e-commerce sector as much as I do today, or the brand for itself. So during that time, I was still working on updating the suitcase because even though there was COVID, you could still have the factories work and update suitcases. So
I had 500 stock that you had.
I had 500 stock. Yeah, exactly. So during that time, I was like, you know what? I've got 500 suitcases of a carry-on size. I know I want to go out and create check-in sizes or a larger carry-on or soft good range.
So you hadn't even sold any and you were already
planning the next thing. It was just, I had the time I think the branding element to me was huge. During that time, we really worked on the branding. I think the branding for me was probably the biggest thing I had to understand, but the marketing. And I didn't come from a marketing background. So trying to understand the marketing side was a huge, huge learning curve. And then just e-commerce in general. And then understanding who your market is and while still looking at all these suitcases in a warehouse going,
when did you launch and how did the launch go?
Officially launched this year.
Wow, so you only officially launched this year.
Yeah, so we teased it last year. We teased it for the European summer last year. And we sold a few cases. It was more direct to consumer. Didn't market on social media. Didn't do any ads, SEO, nothing to do with that like we do today. And, just started selling direct to consumer, which was more so family and friends, getting feedback from them, what they thought of the case and how can we improve, and pricing points. I think that came into a lot of it. And mate, we got to the end of the year, and I had a buddy of mine from LA fly in. He was back living in Melbourne, and he flew into to Sydney to catch up with me. Anyway, I was showing him this prototype of the case of the 500, and I was like, "Yeah, so this is the brand." And you know, everyone knew I was working on this brand for a couple of years. And I was like, "Listen, this is the brand. Like what do you think of it?" And he was like, "Man, this is really cool. Like, congratulations, etc." And that was kind of the extent of it. And then 2 days later, mate, we're sitting at a restaurant, and he goes, "Listen, I've got something to tell you." And I was like, "What do you have to tell me?" And he was really nervous about it. And I just remember him going, "Listen, like, I love what you're doing. Would you consider having me come on as a partner?" And this is obviously, we've just gone through COVID. We're still going through COVID. But, you know, at that time I was like, how am I going to now bring out more sizes, and how am I going to bring out more soft goods where I haven't sold many of these units of 500? And mate, being a really good mate of mine, and him being in that creative space, I was like, absolutely. So he then came on as an investor, and still during COVID, we started manufacturing. So we went and started manufacturing the check-in case, which was the medium, and then the duffel bags, the backpacks. We did laptop sleeves.
I love the blind faith that it's going to do well with
crazy,
that. It's
crazy. So- and mate, we probably had sold 15 units of the 500. But he saw the vision, and so did I, and he saw the product. And I think the product, as you
speaks
know,
for itself. Yeah, we had a good look at it before we started recording. It's incredible.
Thanks, mate. Yeah,
looking forward to grabbing some.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it'd be cool. And to have him then come on and obviously fund that next part of growth, and to have a friend involved who was active, really helped me. I guess educate your own self on you know, everyone has strengths and weaknesses, and it was great because we really complement each other on that standpoint. And then, mate, we ended up obviously creating all the bulk goods, and then officially went to market this year.
And how's it been going?
But it's been good. Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah, it's been exciting. I think like anything, everything takes time. It's step by step, and it's just learning to trust the process. I think through this whole thing, learning to trust the process has been my biggest thing to understand, because we all want it now.
Yeah.
And it's just not the case. And I think if you chase the money, you're in the wrong space, where this for me just felt so right. Similar to, I guess, the yacht breaking, which I still do.
Yeah, which that seems like this is the biggest godsend for you, that you've got 100%. This like backbone, because so many people would be like, oh, I want to go and start something, but I don't have that, not cushiness of like something like that. I wouldn't even call it passive income, because you still obviously have to work for it, but it's just something that you can do without having to be there.
100%, man. 100%. And, you know, still having those lifelong relationships with your clients as well has been amazing. And I spend the summers in Europe. So every year I'd go there for 4 months, and I still stay with Steve and Eve over there, and mate, just have the best time. And we've just got such a great bond. And yeah, he's honestly like my second dad. So I've learned so much from him. So very grateful to he and Rhonda and just my own family. You know, my mum and dad and my stepdad, they've been huge advocates for me and basically pushing me to do things I want to do. It was, you know, taking the route in which I wanted to take. It's a risk, obviously. And it's something in which I think your parents go, "What are you doing?" But it's been amazing. This year's been incredible. It's we've had a really good successful year with the brand. We've bought out more products, more sizes. So we continue to reinvest everything we make back into it. We've even bought on more investment now from a guy here in Australia, and he's come on as an investor as well to now get it to the next stage. So having him come on has been obviously instrumental to our growth. But you know, we're now getting into the retail side. So we just closed, I won't say the name just yet, but we just signed a huge retail deal in the US with, US's largest high-end retailer, and then the same in the UK.
Wow.
So thank you. So both of those are, you know, we've worked really hard on, you know, trying to get those done. And then
we're here in Australia on the Iconic, and the Iconic's been an amazing platform. So, it's all exciting.
From your website too.
Yeah, all direct from the website.
Yeah, I'll definitely leave a bunch of stuff in the show notes. Yeah, make sure awesome. You go just check it out and have a look at.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you want to explain like what's different about yours than going and buying a Samsonite?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's a flirty piece of luggage. I like to call it. It's very flirty. I think when you look at it, I like to say it's a sexy piece of luggage. It's very confident looking, but it's more so on the durability. I think the durability element for us was a huge, huge thing to understand and build, because we all know what cases are like and get thrown around and
zips break.
So having a non-zip suitcase, so we've got a latch lock system, was a huge thing that we designed. And then having a braking system. So the braking system for us, we're the first ones to do it. It's basically a push and release braking system. So if you're on a hill or you're on public transport and your suitcase is running around, or you're trying to chase it down a hill, you push a button and it locks your wheel so it doesn't run away from you. Yeah. So that's been quite cool and a point of difference. But Japanese materials and Italian materials and German materials and assembling all that together. And that still comes back to that due diligence phase where, you know, I went to Germany and I went to Italy and all these places, because you have to understand, I guess, with the suitcase, you've probably got 40 different components and you have to all go to different factories or suppliers and then find one factory who can accept that and put it all together. So I think that's been a huge thing. It's all of our materials come from different parts of the world and you form it into one shell, which has been cool. So I'd say, the durability and the aesthetic. And we like to say we intersect fashion design and aesthetic, and it's really for the tastemaker.
Yeah, it's beautiful. The insides, like you said, all such high quality.
Thank you. Yeah.
Materials and textiles, but then also the lock systems.
Yeah.
Really unique. It's something I hadn't seen before until you showed me just
it's cool, isn't it?
Really cool.
Yeah.
But man, it's so cool. Like, your story is just one of the most unique I've ever heard from growing up on a pearl farm.
Yeah.
Going to school at like a private school and then heading over to I'm trying to remember the parts of your story, heading to travel and into brokering boats in Europe.
It's been a ride, but it's been amazing.
Yeah, starting your thing in New York, being in the bloody medical industry. Yeah. I'm like, it's so crazy trying to like piece it all together.
Trust me, my parents are like, what are you doing? But my friend, to be honest, a lot of my I've always been quite private as well. You know, I guess.
Yeah, I feel very grateful that you've let me in on this
story. No, for sure, for sure.
I don't know how many times you've even probably told this.
No, I haven't really probably told it, because I think, you know, I like to keep a lot of these things to myself because I think, you know, people like to ruin beautiful things. I've always said that. And I think, and I've been a real advocate for, if you say something and it doesn't come through, it's almost like you're giving yourself bad luck.
Yeah.
So
it's really interesting you say that, because it's something that I used to think, but now I've flipped it and I try and tell everyone everything, because what I've learned, it might be quite a bit different because of the industry that I'm in, but by telling people what I'm planning on doing, I get people go, oh, I can help you with that.
100%.
But if you don't tell people, then you miss out on opportunities.
So definitely.
I think there's a seesaw.
I agree. And I think I've learned that through aiding the brand. I think for me, I'm such an advocate for the brand because I truly believe in it. Obviously I use it all the time, and it's more of a passion project. I think for me, I've finally found my true passion. And I think during all the things I've done, I was chasing the money.
Yeah.
And, you know, some worked out, some didn't. But, you know, you look at like the hospitality side, you look at the luggage side, you look at the chartering side, that all comes down to lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's where I like to say our brand is different, because we try to give it more of a lifestyle. So I'd like to say it's more of a lifestyle brand than travel, because although it's called Aiden and it's named after myself, I really think it portrays me in a way of just get out there and go for it and explore the world. And our slogan and our motto is "The world is waiting," because it truly is. And, you know, like I said, I think that's still been my best education. And I think anyone who asks me, I tell them travel the world, because life's short. And if you don't do it, you're going to die wondering. And you just learn so many things, and the network I've been able to create over there, similar to you with what you've been doing your entire life, you know, through surfing and now, you know, the podcasting. When you meet certain people and you have this an amazing connection with them and you grow your network, I think that's probably one of the most special things you can do.
And I think that's a really important thing to highlight with your story, that sure, there might have been a bit of privilege with family help, but also your first time you went overseas came off the back of you landscaping for 6 months to then go and travel. Whereas people just come up with all these excuses. Whereas if you work really hard for a sustained period of time for six months and save your money and don't go out and get on the piss every weekend and don't do the stereotypical thing that we all do, and then go and travel and experience the world, but then also put yourself in situations where opportunities can happen.
Yeah.
Whether it be like you going along the docks and you know what I mean? Finding or pestering this guy to get that opportunity or going to the Warwick the day after because of the discrepancy. Like there's so many pivots in your story that came from
Just doing.
Yeah. Just actually taking a step out of your comfort zone and going out there and having a conversation that might feel a bit awkward or uncomfortable, but being open to it.
Exactly. And I think one of my biggest things I've learned and, you know, Shoe Dog, this book.
I loved
it. It's one of the greatest inspirational books. It's a similar scenario, right? Where he just went, he took William, he went over to Asia and started manufacturing shoes, which, you know, he had a passion for track, but shoes he had no idea about. Mm. Similar thing to luggage. I think, you know, the lifestyle, but, you know, their slogan, Just Do It. I only found out this the other day. It made so much sense, but their slogan, Just Do It, is literally about just doing it. It's taking the step. It's not, you know, when you think of Nike, you go, Nike's for successful athletes and it's for athletes only. And it wasn't until I actually was listening to a interview with him. He goes, Just Do It means it's for the people who are going out when it's raining and you see a light pole flickering and we're the ones standing under the light pole, you know, egging you on. Mm. And it just came to me so privileged that I was like, you know what, Just Do It is literally just doing it. It doesn't mean anything else apart from that. And I think if you don't take that plunge into taking the, you know, the adversity to go out and do these things, you're never going to know. And I've always been an advocate for, I just want to try everything in life. Mm. And I think I finally found the passion and I still want to do obviously many other things. And
how old are you now?
So I'm 31.
31, fuck.
Yeah.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah. It's been crazy, man. Like I think, you know, the hospitality for me, I still want to do a lot of things in hospitality.
Yeah.
Because again, it's seeing a good group of people come together to a venue and enjoy, live life and laugh. That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
So I still want to venture into hospitality stuff. So I'm working on a couple of things.
Yeah, so you've just opened
restaurant on Rodeo Drive, which is crazy. But you know, we're working on a couple of new things for America next year. In the hospitality side, and then we've obviously got the luggage brand.
How do you work with only businesses there and visas?
I'm just
curious about visas because I'm like working on
visas
a lot lately with my partner. But
Originally, you can get the investment visa. So if you invest a certain amount into the American economy and it goes to actual physical use for a company, you can get an investment visa. Okay. So I've had one of those, and then every time I go back now, I basically get a sponsorship through the companies I own. So I've got four companies in America that I own now.
Wow.
And so I get sponsored through one of them, depending upon what it is, whether it's in hospitality, brokerage, or luggage. it's been crazy. So yeah, you get the sponsorship visa, which is a lot of Australians have it. It's just an E3. But yeah, really, really cool visa to have because it gives you the independence to come and go.
Yeah.
You work for an employer, so you've got the safety of an employer paying you a particular wage. And it's been a journey. So I think next year for me will be a lot of America.
Yeah, that was the question before we ask my wrap-up question. What's in the future? What are you excited for? What are you looking to achieve over the next, let's call it 12 to 18 months now that the world is open for the company and your restaurant's open? Like, seems like now you've spent the last couple of years really building that foundation.
Absolutely,
and now it's time to take over the world.
Exactly. I think the world is waiting. Exactly. I love it. It's I think the next thing for me is working on a few of these hospitality projects. I think that for me is obviously such a huge passion driver. So investing into certain hospitality projects with my partners in LA, and then possibly doing something here in Sydney. I think there's a great market here in Sydney, and there's still things that I think are left
untapped stuff.
I think so, yeah. And a lot of those concepts from Europe and America, I think, could do really well here. So I'd like to entertain doing something here in Australia, being on Australian soil, and just working on the brand, man. I think working on the brand for me, it's, you know, continuing getting retailers, working on celebrity endorsement and partnership deals, and just growing the brand to have more colorways and more sizes and more materials, and really just get to a point of, you know, in the next 24 months, look to bring on a larger scale investor where you can then go and taken on globally, you know, not just, you know, in certain parts of the world, and take it to a global scale. And just seeing people use the brand. I think that's been the most humbling thing I've experienced so far, is just going through airports and seeing people use your brand.
Sick.
That's been a pretty cool feeling. And I think that's one thing which just keeps you going. You go, okay, you're going to have bad days. And I've always said everything in life is temporary. You know, you always have bad days. And, mate, it's been a roller coaster for us. It hasn't been all roses. It's been, you know, we've been in a lot of trenches, as any business does. But I think when you see people use the brand, or you get a nice review, or you just explore the world yourself and you keep understanding ways to improve.
Yeah.
And, you know, being a your own business owner, I think, you know, even similar to your podcast, I think you're always working. No matter if you go on a holiday,
you probably don't actually know what I do. I do a lot more than my podcast. I'll tell you off air after.
Awesome.
I've got so much shit going on. But
it's crazy, right? It's like, but you can't switch off. And people go, oh, take your break, switch off. But I think when you have your own thing running and you've got
your 24/7. It goes from like, oh, you create a business, so you escape the 9-to-5, so you jump into the 24/7.
Exactly. And like, mate, it might look all glamorous, like here, staying here and, you know, working from here, but like it really is a 24/7 business. And I think because we work in America and the UK and Europe a lot, the time differences. So you're up early or you're up late at night. So during the day here in Australia, you get a bit of time to do your own thing. So
we'll go for a little surf.
We'll go for a boogie. It looks all right down there.
Looks good.
Two last questions I want to ask you. First one, what sort of advice would you have for someone who is young and wants to be entrepreneurial but might be being held back a bit by fear or by finance? What sort of advice would you give someone who wants to have a go and really take on the world?
The advice I'd probably say is figure out a way to do it. I think trying to brainstorm ways, if it's a financial hurdle, figure out a financial way to make it happen, whether that's putting together a concept, putting together a deck. And I think if you believe in it as much as you think you do, someone's going to back you no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if it's a financial hurdle, or figure out a way to just start it, even if it's a small step, go work somewhere for a year, save up the money, and then put that towards it. Because I think from an investment standpoint, people like seeing you invest in it first. So if you're personally, 100%, if you're personally invested into it, they know, okay, they're just not relying on my money. And if it fails, it is what it is. Yeah. They've actually personally put capital in. Similar to me, you know, I spent 2 years developing the brand, putting every single cent I had into it, and then going to an investor and saying, listen, I've spent this amount of money, I've got it to here, it's all done. Would you like to come on as an investor?
Yeah.
And I think seeing that for sure. The other thing of just doing it, I think, the advice I would probably say is, I think, and you know, you hear it a lot, but passion, you know, finding what you're passionate about, because if you're passionate about it, you're going to do what it takes to get it done.
Yeah.
And don't chase the money. You know, I learned that from an early on stage. It was, you know, I think you all want to live a certain lifestyle, and you know, especially for me living in Monaco and these places, I was like, I want to live this lifestyle. So you chase different things to get you to that lifestyle without really learning or understanding that, yeah, maybe you're not even passionate about it. So I think finding out what you're passionate about, and I think it doesn't have to be like finance, or it doesn't have to be something that involves money on that level. I think for me, it was, I was passionate about traveling. So if I'm passionate about traveling, what can I do on a business front to utilize that?
Yeah.
Same with, I love going out to restaurants. Okay, well, why don't you go out and create your own restaurant where you can eat for free? Similar things like that. It was, you know, and then I love boats, so why not? You know, why not? And you've got a lot of friends. You know what I mean. So it was finding passion. Biggest advice.
That's fuck, man. You've had like one of the craziest 15 years. I'm excited to see where the future goes. And I'll leave in the show notes your restaurant.
Awesome, man.
I'll leave in the show notes, obviously, Aiden the brand.
Yeah.
So people can check out your luggage. But awesome. The last question I do finish every Good Humans podcast with is, what does being a good human mean to Aiden Walsh?
Being a good human, to me, I feel, is someone just being nice. I think it's so easy to be nice. And being a good human is someone who's humble, someone who's gratifying, someone who gives back, I think is a huge thing. And to me, and I think just accepting people for who they are, I think you never know what is going on in someone's mind. And I think as a society, we're really quick to judge. And so I've learned just to take a step back, because you never know what that person's going through. So I think being a good human is just understanding that everyone's got shit going on.
Empathy.
It's life's tough. And if you can be there for someone when you need to be there, I think that's a big step to do. And just being grateful for life, being blessed, because mate, there's so many more people out there who have it worse than we do. And I think we obviously forget that at times. And I think you get to that stage of life where, you know, especially now that I'm getting into my 30s and you start seeing families and you're seeing your mates get married and have kids, I think you see that that's beautiful. You know, you see that love is beautiful, kindness is beautiful, being nice is beautiful, being humble is beautiful, and just knowing that you are blessed and to not judge a book by its cover, because everyone's got shit going on.
Mate, very well put. It's been a pleasure getting to know your story. Fuck, that was probably one of the craziest hour and a half of like somebody's journey ever.
Yeah, dude.
Like I said, I'm excited to see where it comes.
Awesome,
all the
man.
Stuff will be in the show notes.
Cool.
Mate, big thanks for jumping on Good Humans.
My boy. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it, man.
Legend.
Appreciate you. Legend.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.